This episode is sponsored by Microsoft. Microsoft Cloud for Retail helps you build a more resilient retail business with proven, scalable solutions that integrate with the tools you already use. Learn how you can harness your data, delight customers, drive sustainability, and empower your employees with Microsoft Cloud for Retail today. Learn more by clicking the link in our show notes. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, February 1st. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Microsoft Cloud for Retail. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. On today's episode, we'll be discussing returns. Joining me for today's episode, we have two of our analysts. First up is Sky Canaves. Hey, Sky.
Hey, Sarah. It's great to be back another week.
Great to have you. Also here today is Karina Perkins. Hey, Karina.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for being here. Let's get started with our first segment, News and Reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's story is a January 24th Wall Street Journal article titled, Consumers Tired of Inflation Scrimp and Splurge. Reporter Rachel Wolf writes, Americans are cutting back on many everyday purchases amid inflation while splurging on a few big ticket items. Think shopping for staples at the dollar store and dressed in Gucci sneakers. I think of this as a sort of screw it effect. It's the reason that I ordered takeout last night, even as I trade down on grocery items. Sky, your review of this story in 60 seconds is...
I think this points to a very interesting trend in how consumers are being so much more strategic about their spending nowadays with the high cost of inflation. We saw that Walmart noted that they're seeing like most of their growth in grocery shopping coming from higher income consumers. And we're seeing now consumers are really opting to trade down, even as like the big CPG conglomerates are raising their prices. They're saying, well, it's not worth it to pay 10 or 15% more for something if I can just get the lower cost generic brand and save up for the real products that I want, which in this case are luxury goods. Recently at NRF, the chair and CEO of LVMH in Americas, he talked a bit about how luxury spending has become a little more entrenched among consumers who can afford it or has become just because luxury, once you trade up, it's a bit stickier. It's harder to go back down and give up that part of your identity.
Yeah, same way it's hard for me to give up that takeout burrito. Karina, your review of this story in 60 seconds is?
I think that there are some really interesting differences here between the US and the UK, where the economic situation is a little bit tougher, still a little bit stickier. We saw that luxury clothing and accessories held up pretty well in the UK in 2022. I read an article that said imports of Swiss watches were up by 31% in the first half of 2022. But I think some of that was driven by the ultra wealthy rather than everyday people. And recently we've started to see a bit of trouble brewing. A few luxury brands and retailers have issued profit warnings. But what we are noticing in the UK is that people have been spending on little luxuries. So that's kind of lipsticks rather than handbags. NPD Group recently said that premium UK beauty sales over Christmas were up 9.2% on the previous year. And there were double-digit increases in things like hair care, makeup, skincare. So it'll be really interesting to see whether that also continues in 2023 or whether the worsening economic climate means that people stop even those little purchases.
Sure. We did a podcast back around Halloween about the lipstick effect. I'm going to give a plug for that where we talked about this phenomenon exactly. People trading up on really specific items.
Yeah. And LVMH just reported results last week and they noted especially strong results for Sephora in particular, which is that higher end beauty shopper that's still spending.
All right, well, let's keep going with our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is returns. People in the US are making more returns than ever, but growth in returns volume fell from a 20% increase in 2021 to closer to a 3% increase in 2022. That's over 2021. That's according to our forecast. Sky, what is the driving force behind this drop in growth?
So I would say the biggest driving force has been the return to stores, as consumers are no longer as reliant on e-commerce to fulfill most of their needs. They can be sure of being able to check out products in person try them on and get a better sense of what they need. I think that at the same time, consumers have also become more savvy about what products are best purchased online versus in stores. So that's helping to drive down return rates, because for the most part, nobody goes shopping online or in store wanting to return what they buy.
Karina, are we seeing the same trend in a decrease in returns growth in the UK?
No, we've got similar trends in the UK in terms of people returning to stores and doing a little bit less of their shopping online. But we've got a slightly different picture here. We don't have a forecast on return volumes, so we don't have an exact picture of what's going on. But everything we're hearing is that the returns problem has got worse for UK retailers over the past year. Back in November, retail returns firm Rebound said the UK was on for a record returns year. And in November, returns were up by more than a quarter on the previous year. And over the Christmas and New Year period, returns were up 40% on the same period in 2021. So it's definitely a sort of worsening problem here. And I think that's to do a lot with the cost of living crisis. I think some people are ordering clothes, and whereas previously they might have kept them, if, even if they weren't quite perfect, because returning them is a hassle. Nowadays, they're kind of really putting a lot of value on the money, so they are returning them if they're not perfect.
So similar to what we were talking about up top, where people are still buying goods, but they're being a lot more discerning about which ones they're seeking out.
Exactly that. Yeah. And I think that whereas previously they might have kept things that weren't 100% perfect, I think we've seen a similar thing with gifts, which could explain the Christmas and New Year returns. Previously, people might have accepted a gift that wasn't exactly what they wanted. But now with the cost of living crisis, people aren't able to buy themselves the things that they want. So they're being a little bit sort of fussier generally about what they're buying.
Yeah. And I think here in the US, we also saw a bit of an uptick in returns over the holidays this year. And I think that's kind of a temporary blip because there was so much more promotional discount seeking. And a lot of retailers have these very long return windows, but not all of them price match. So that really gave consumers the opportunity to buy something early. And if the price went down, then they would return the more expensive item and keep the lower cost item that they got later on.
I want to talk more about e-commerce in the U.S. specifically. E-commerce returns volume in the U.S. dropped by 2.5% between 2021 and 2022. Why are people making fewer returns online, Skye?
So part of that, I think, as I mentioned, is just the return to stores and that people are getting savvier about what to buy online versus in-store. And they're still learning in many cases. I mean, I, for example, made the mistake this week of trying to buy jeans for my five-year-old daughter online. And then when I went to pick them up at the store, I realized the fabric is too stiff and they're too long. So I had to return them, and I won't be doing that again. Another reason is that now we're starting to see more retailers fine-tuning or changing their return policies, especially in fashion, where the high costs of bracketing or consumers buying multiple items with the intent of returning whatever doesn't fit, those costs are just not sustainable for a lot of fashion retailers who are in the lower to mid-tier price points. So we're seeing a lot of the fast fashion retailers like Zara and others like J.Crew, Abercrombie & Fitch, starting to charge return shipping for online orders while it's still free in stores. But that could discourage some of the practices where you'll think twice if you're going to have to pay for everything that you're ordering.
Sure, but might that also discourage the actual purchase? Like Amazon is like 40% of US retail dollars and they still have free returns.
Absolutely. And those, I would note that those free returns are part of the subscription bundle. So in the way they're paid for by the consumer, as well as by the merchants that are listing their items. So Amazon, for example, they charge fashion merchants a bit more of a take rate because they know historically that there are a lot more returns coming from apparel purchases. But we also know that consumers do pay attention to return policies when they're shopping online. And from surveys that I've seen, it's anywhere from like 50 to 70% don't want to pay return shipping fees for online orders or would be discouraged from making a purchase online if they're going to have to pay for return shipping.
Karina, what does that look like in the UK?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a really similar picture here in terms of the amount of people that would be put off potentially from ordering online if they have to pay for returns. It's around three quarters. Most of the surveys that I see put it at around three quarters. But I think the impact really depends on the retailer. If you're a retailer who has an e-commerce operation and a store, potentially by charging for returns, you're going to encourage the person to go in store and buy that in store and actually try it on. So that's okay. You're not necessarily losing a sale. if you are a sort of digital only seller, then obviously you're potentially completely losing out on a sale there. And I think as well, if you're a brand with a kind of really loyal following, you might get away with it. Because I think if some people love shopping at Zara, they're going to shop with Zara regardless of whether they have to pay for a return, especially if Zara is offering free in-store returns, for example. But retailers and brands with a slightly less customer loyal base, they might struggle to attract new customers and sort of lose some of their shoppers if they're starting to charge for returns.
Sure. There are a few micro labels that I really like that charge more for returns, but I'm still likely to shop there because they're these like small like cult following brands. So I think it's exactly that.
Absolutely. If you've got a brand loyalty, if you've got a customer following, then I think people, as long as you're really clear, I think that's important, is companies, if you are going to charge for returns, being really clear and upfront about the fact that you're doing so and offering customers an alternative like returning it in store for free.
Speaking of where people are making returns, I want to pivot back to the US because where people make returns is changing in the US. So people are less likely to make returns in stores and they're more likely to make returns via third-party drop-off services. Sky, what is behind this trend?
Right. This has been a really big trend. We've seen a big rise in third-party drop-off locations and people adopting that, taking advantage of those options. We forecast that the number of people returning at third-party drop-off locations is going to grow by more than 56% between 2020 and 2026. The early driver of this trend was really Amazon because they're so online heavy. People still need to return things and Amazon needs to find a way to make that cost efficient for them and for buyers to maintain that free return offer of the Amazon Prime membership. So Amazon started out with partnerships with UPS, with Kohl's, and expanded into Whole Foods. Foods and more recently into staples. And it's just about convenience for returns. If people don't have to pay for returns, they're willing to travel a little bit, not too far. And now we're seeing a lot more expansion of dedicated return third-party drop-off return service providers like Happy Returns, which was acquired by PayPal and now has more than 5,000 return bar locations across the US, including an expansion into Ulta Beauty stores. And this is a win-win both for the original retailer and for, you know, what in some cases is a rival retailer like Kohl's. Back in 2020, they reported 2 million new customers from their Amazon partnership. And of course, Ulta Beauty will be happy to have more foot traffic coming in, even if it's to make returns from rival retailers or sellers, just because that will bring more people into the store where they're likely to make purchases.
That makes sense. There's one more thing I want to talk about before we go to break. We've been talking a lot about returns. I want to talk about how fashion trends might influence returns. So during the pandemic, we saw a lot of movement into looser fitting, waistbands, elastics, things like that. And that made returns go down, right? Because the clothes didn't need to fit in a specific way. Now we're sort of moving towards more structural clothing once again. Are returns going back up as a result?
Yeah, I think inevitably when people are buying lots of loungewear, a kind of baggy jumper, a pair of tracksuit pants, you're going to get away with things not fitting quite perfectly. You've got a little bit more leeway than you are with a kind of tight fitting evening dress. And we're certainly seeing that people are buying more of that kind of clothing as they replenish their wardrobes after lockdowns. Interestingly, some UK retailers have been experimenting with making their designs a bit more forgiving, and they've noticed a drop in return rates. I read one article about a fashion brand called Little Mistress, and it said that its return rate had dipped by 7% versus the previous 3 years because it had improved its fabric. And also kind of created a slightly more forgiving design. So that's one interesting way that retailers and brands can think about reducing their return rates.
And I think that would have driven some more of the online returns last year in 2021 as people really started to get out more and deal with figuring out what size they were now after the pandemic in new clothes when they're buying fitted clothes. And I think even early in 2022, I think Macy's noted in one of their earnings calls for the beginning of the year that they were seeing the shift to more occasion wear or formal wear driving returns in stores. But I think now with the pandemic peak or concern past us and so many more people returning to stores and eager to return to stores, they will figure out that if you're buying an evening gown, maybe you do want to try it on or try a few on in person rather than just ordering and returning.
I do think you're onto something there, though, with people sort of buying clothes in a new size for the first time and as a result having to make more returns. Okay, that is all we have time for in the first half. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. This week, Karina and Sky are ranking the top five things retailers can do to reduce e-commerce returns volume. E-commerce returns are really expensive for retailers, and the most obvious thing retailers can do is charge for returns, but I want to go into some less obvious things that retailers have available to them. Sky, can you kick it off with, in no particular order, one of the top five things retailers can do to reduce returns volume?
Sure. Well, first, I think putting someone in charge of returns across the business. Often returns are thought of as just a logistics or reverse logistics issue, but it can really span all of a business, from the product design to the packaging to things in between, like the customer experience. Some of the most frequently cited reasons for returns are like the size, the fit, the quality, or the color don't match what they saw in the description. So really, somebody who can understand the root causes for returns across the business and help different parts of the business implement that to solve the reasons for returns in the first place.
So you're saying making sure that they have someone or a department dedicated to stopping returns before they even happen?
Managing returns from the very initial causes, which could be product design, like a frequently returned product, there might be a flaw in it, or the sizing just might be completely off, to anything like the packaging. I've had products where the packaging is damaged and the contents are leaking out, for example. So all of those issues need to be considered in kind of a more holistic way rather than just saying returns is something that happens after the purchase.
Absolutely. That makes sense. The best offense is a good defense.
Yep.
Karina, can you give us another strategy retailers can take to reduce e-commerce returns volume?
Sure. So another thing to think about is your delivery policy. So we saw a lot of e-commerce retailers offering free delivery for orders over a certain value. And of course, that's a great way to encourage people to spend more. But there is a risk that at the same time, you're going to encourage people to buy more than they need. And some of those people might have no intention of keeping all of those products. And if you're offering free returns as well, they might then return them. So getting rid of free delivery for orders over a certain value, you can either offer free delivery on all orders or you can charge everyone for delivery is one option. And similarly, any kind of promotions that you're running, which are offering money off, for example, if you reach a certain threshold, you've got to think about the potential implications for returns, because again, you're encouraging people to spend a certain amount and some people might overbuy. And even if they do intend to keep it initially, they might receive it, have buyer's remorse and end up returning some of it.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, in many ways with the promotions, retailers are making returns almost a game for shoppers that would incentivize returns.
Exactly, yeah.
Sky, can you give us another one of the top things retailers can do to reduce e-commerce returns volume?
Sure. So this one is more specifically targeted to fashion and apparel brands, and that is aiming at flagging bracketing earlier, particularly in the shopping cart. There should be tools in place to flag when a shopper is putting multiples of the same item in different sizes in their shopping cart and offer them support, offer them a chat with someone in customer service to help them find the right fit and size, or offer a size chart, see if they need help, ask them if they want to come into the store and have those items reserved to try on rather than just shipping out, you know, many of the same item with the high likelihood that most of them will be returned. And we know that bracketing has really been on the rise over the last few years. According to Narvar's annual surveys, the percentage of consumers who say they bracket has increased from 40% in 2017 to now more than 60%.
And just to reiterate, bracketing is buying the same item in multiple sizes to see what fits.
Right, with the intent of sending back whatever doesn't fit.
I guess in some cases as well, if you are charging for delivery, you might encourage bracketing because consumers aren't going to want to pay a delivery charge twice. So depending on how your returns policy works, if you're saying that someone has to order something, it might not fit, they send it back and then they have to pay delivery again to get it in another size, that's really encouraging them just to order three different sizes in the first place and return the two that don't fit.
Absolutely. That makes sense to me. You don't want to order this wrong size twice. You might as well just order it wrong once, twice at the same. The math isn't working for me, but I do get what you're saying. Karina, can you give another thing retailers can do to reduce e-commerce returns volume?
Sure. And this flows on quite nicely from the last example, actually, which is really helping customers to get it right in the first place. So there is technology now that is helping e-commerce retailers achieve that. So that's things like VR and AR technology, which is allowing customers to virtually try on clothes or picture a piece of furniture in their home so that they can really get a good idea of what they're going to receive before they get it. And there's also some great AI technology which helps people pick the right size. So a few retailers have been using that. You can say, I need help with my size, and fill in a form and it'll recommend the right size for you. So I really think anything that you can do to make sure that the customer is getting the correct item in the first place is really going to help.
Absolutely. I agree on this one. I've said before, I'm really bullish on the future of AR in shopping specifically. And I feel like it's definitely in retailers' best interest to make sure customers get the right item the first time. And AR will be huge for that. It already is. Okay. And Sky, can you give the last of our top five in no particular order strategies retailers can take to reduce e-commerce returns volume?
Sure. And this would be really fine-tuning the free returns offer. So we hear about retailers just rolling back free returns and charging for return shipping. But I think there are ways to, rather than have a one-size-fits-all policy, really figure out which consumers should get free returns and which ones may not get them. So at the very least, free returns should be tied to a loyalty program membership, where then retailers have the opportunity to collect more data on those consumers and get more feedback about why they're returning. Or they might grant credits for free returns based on how much previous spending has taken place, or create tiers within their programs that qualify for different levels of returns. So I think this is really key to, you know, kind of managing returns, and also if free returns are offered, you know, to get more value from them.
Tying returns to some sort of loyalty program is exactly the kind of thing that I can see consumers being really upset about at first, and then a year later, it's suddenly commonplace.
It's a strategy that Nike has in place for its Nike membership, and I think it's worked. I mean, when we do our bi-monthly BizRate surveys and we look at how many members are in the Nike program, it's pretty high, especially among the 18 to 34-year-old group. It's sometimes in the range of 20%. So I think people do sign up because they offer free shipping and free returns. It's a free program, so it's no cost. If the free returns are tied to some sort of membership program, maybe there has to be a little more value add, like the Prime membership, or Walmart Plus recently started offering home return pickup at no extra charge for its members.
I think that's another interesting point, is thinking about how easy it is for people to return things. So it's not just about the cost, it's also about the ease of returns. So if you're working it into a loyalty program, like you said, sometimes it's about just making it that little bit easier. So using those third-party drop-off locations rather than making someone come back to that exact store, for example, or have to put it in the post.
Sure. That mention of Walmart Plus is a good reminder to check out last week's episode where Sky, Blake, and I discussed the Walmart Plus flywheel. Sky, you also have a report on returns coming out soon, right?
Yes, subscribers should look out for it coming next week. It's our first U.S. retail returns forecast.
Make sure to check those out. And if you're a pro subscriber, you can head to insiderintelligence.com to get further info on these reports and more. But that's all we have time for today. So thank you, Sky, for being here.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be back.
And thank you, Karina.
Thanks, Sarah.
Please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you, listeners, and to our producer, Victoria, who returns to us each week no matter what we throw at her. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Microsoft Cloud for Retail. And tomorrow you can join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily.